KPTZ now joins the special broadcast of Supporting Your Quarantinager. This is KPTZ, Port Townsend.
Good evening, and welcome to Supporting Your Quarantinager. We are joined with a group of local experts on adolescent health and development to help parents best navigate these strange and challenging times with their teenagers. I'm your host, Melody Sky Eisler. I'm the library director for the City of Port Townsend Public Library, and I'm honored to moderate this panel. It's truly a dream team of incredible speakers to best support our community's teens in this very strange times we find ourselves in the era of COVID-19. I want to begin by thanking our sponsors. KPTZ 91.9 FM is simulcasting our event. Thank you to Bill Putney at KPTZ. Huge thanks to Skillmation and Stronger Towns, the City of Port Townsend, the Port Townsend School District, the Benji Project, and Jefferson County Public Health. And thank you to all of our wonderful viewers for joining us this evening. Now, please make sure that your audio is muted. We will have time for questions at the end. You'll be typing those into the chat box. And if you are an audience member, please mute your video as well. It helps save on bandwidth. So I just want to give you all a little info about the library, and then I'll introduce our panelists. We're very pleased that both the Port Townsend Public Library and the Jefferson County Library District are offering virtual services. So that means if your teens need help right now with homework or resources, like access to our databases, ebooks, e-magazines, we are here to help you, and we are providing live reference Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And in this time when I think we're all very sad about all our wonderful events that we love and treasure in our community being canceled, I want to reassure you all that the libraries are working on a really wonderful all-age summer reading program that will be totally online, and that will include wonderful events for teenagers and activities. So stay tuned for more details. So now I'm pleased to introduce David Shearer. David is a member of Skillmation's Steering Committee, a retired psychologist, a professor emeritus from UMass Amherst, and new to Port Townsend. Welcome, David. He is going to talk with us tonight about adolescent development.
Thank you, Melody. I think parenting a teenager is a challenging task in normal times. Raising an adolescent during a pandemic just adds a whole number of layers of complexity to the job. There are a whole lot of different aspects of adolescent development that we could talk about, but I want to mention three in particular. The first of those is the issue of adolescent autonomy seeking. It's actually pretty amazing when you think about kids go from elementary school and being completely dependent on parents and family to within 8 or 10 years being pretty independent of parents and family. And so under ordinary circumstances, this begins in early adolescence, and there's two earmarks of that parents don't like very much. One is called the de-idealization of parents. Early adolescents take a lot of pleasure in finding fault with their parents, and it's usually not until later adolescence or early adulthood that they are more empathic with parents. The other issue is seeking privacy and keeping secrets, and parents don't particularly care for that very much either. With the school closure and the stay-at-home orders, it's really kind of complicated normal autonomy seeking. So kids don't have the same opportunities for independence, and they're forced, it just because of the nature of the pandemic, it actually creates more dependency on parents. So I think there's a couple things that parents ought to try to think about during the pandemic time. Whenever possible, try to respect your teenager's privacy. Look for opportunities to allow your adolescent self-determination, and involve them in family decision-making as much as possible. I think a second major adolescent developmental theme, we're going to probably talk about this on this panel a lot, has to do with peer relationships. Again, it's really wonderful to watch. You see in elementary school kids spend the majority of their time when they're not in school with parents or adult care, family or adult caretakers. When you look at adolescents, they actually spend the majority of their time with peers. And so the pandemic has obviously created problems with kids spending time with their peers. Ordinarily, kids like to do, they engage in more verbal intimacy with their friends than they do with their family. And as they get older and mature, they explore more physical intimacy with their peers. So, some of the texting, FaceTime, social media, that's really helped a little bit with some of the social relationship sort of stuff. But it's, I think, probably unrealistic to expect teenagers to not want to hang out with one another. So it might be that given what we know about COVID-19, and Susan might have more to tell us about this, that it would be better for parents to put your emphasis on how to keep kids safe while they're with their peers rather than prohibiting them from being with their peers. So things like making sure they're in a small group of peers, like 3 or 2 or 3 or 4 and not 8 or 10 or 12. And making sure that when they re-enter the home, that they there's a routine about washing their hands and sanitizing them, things that they've touched and that sort of stuff. Lastly, I think there's the whole issue of conflict with parents. Again, ordinarily, what we see in early adolescence is conflict with parents tends to peak. Kids tend to fuss a lot about, wanting to have more privacy and wanting to have more autonomy and independence. What social scientists have kind of figured out is that these arguments that early teens have with their parents tend to be much more distressing to parents than they are to teens. Teenagers tend to kind of shrug it off after a couple minutes. A lot of times parents really hang on to these conflicts. So one of the more popular theories about parenting styles has to do suggests that people use authoritative parenting. And so authoritative parents really establish very high expectations for their kids, but they give them enormous amount of support in order to reach those expectations. Authoritative parents know that kids are going to screw up, they're going to make mistakes. And so authoritative parents are forgiving, they bend, but they don't break. Authoritative parents tend to try to negotiate with their teenagers whenever possible. And the other thing that I think is really important, especially during the pandemic period of time, is what we call supervision and monitoring. Just kind of keeping track of kids. Who are they hanging out with? When are they supposed to be? Where are they supposed to be? When are they supposed to be home? Just texting or chatting on the phone quickly to check in and see how they're doing. And lastly, I would say that authoritative parents really kind of pick their battles. And I think that's going to be really important during this pandemic time to decide what's most important for you in your family and stick to that rather than trying to fight about all sorts of every little thing that kind of comes up. And that might be tricky to do. And we'll be talking with Heather a little bit about some of the self-calming possibilities that might help with that. So with that said, I think those are three kind of main issues of adolescent development that are really important to kind of keep in mind as we, as each of the other panelists talk about health and schools and mental health. So thank you, Melody. Let me turn it back to you.
That's great, David. Thank you so much for that information. Now we're going to turn to Susan. I'm just going to spotlight her video. So Susan Bone O'Brien is a family nurse practitioner at Jefferson County Public Health and the school-based health centers at Chimicum Middle School and High School and Port Townsend High School. She has been providing comprehensive adolescent care at the school-based health clinics since their opening in 2008. And we're so happy to have you with us today, Susan. Thank you. So if you can talk more about public health and teenagers, I think David started to touch on it. We are looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Thank you, Melody. So I first want to just say that because I'm the practitioner at the two schools, I want to make sure that the community and families and teens all know that even though the schools are closed and our health clinics that are in the schools are also closed. We are still providing services for teens during this time through Jefferson County Public Health Office, which is the health department right next to QFC in Port Townsend. We're doing some in-person and we're doing a lot of telehealth. And then the mental health counselors who work out of both schools and also Quilcene actually are also available by video or telephone to students, and they're connecting with students there. So if the best way probably to get access, to know how to get access, is 360, that's the main health department number, 360-385-9400, option 3, to get that information. But I want to make sure people are aware of that. I'm going to talk about four kind of bullet points that I thought would be helpful. One is physical distancing challenges, which Dave has already talked about a little bit. Vaping. And what does COVID-19 look like in a teenager? And what is our risk, you know, in Jefferson County? So the physical distancing, I think that's really difficult for all of us right now. And I think for teens, many teens, that can be really, really challenging. If your teen is at home and not hanging out with their friends, that's great. That's the safest, and that's what's recommended. But I know that a lot of teens, that's not the case. And if that was my thinking too, is that if there's ways that we can decrease the risk, because I think that they're still going to need to be hanging out with some of their friends. Like, for example, instead of hanging out with 6 or 8 friends, maybe picking 1 or 2 of the same friends to be interacting with, and the others are maybe social, you know, FaceTiming or whatever, because the bigger the bubble, the higher the risk with more people interacting with other people. And then the, you know, the whole things that we've been learning for 2 months, the 20-second hand washing before and after you eat, before you touch your face, when you walk into the house, mask use out in public, I think is really helpful. And then also disinfecting surfaces at home, you know, once or twice a day, going through the doorknobs and stuff like that. I think that can be also a way to help reduce some of the risk. The other considerations, if there's somebody in the home that's an older grandparent or has health issues, those are obviously things that we want to be keeping in mind if we have teens that are around other potential risks. Vaping. In the last 2 years over the entire nation, the use of teens vaping has gone up, unfortunately, rather than down. And that's true across the nation, and it's true here in Jefferson County. And that's been a huge concern for medical practitioners and school people, and I think all of us. COVID-19 is, it turns out the teens that are using vapes are getting a much higher risk for getting very, very ill with COVID-19. And that's obviously very distressing. In addition, I actually just learned this today or yesterday, the vaping companies are sending out all these ads for discounts for vapes right now during this pandemic, which is just like adding insult to injury in my mind. I don't even know what to say about that. But anyway, I wanted to just bring up the vape issue because it does make teens at much higher risk with the COVID virus. What does it look like in teens? COVID-19 for a lot of teens is asymptomatic or very mild symptoms, and they may not even realize they have it. And they also may have some of the same symptoms that adults are having: fever, chills, sore throat, difficulty breathing, feeling horrible, achy. Just recently, we're learning about a very rare but very serious syndrome that happens with children and teens. And they have a new name for it. It's called multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children. And this is happening like around 4 to 6 weeks after they have gotten the virus. So a lot of these teens don't even have any necessarily symptoms that they recognize as COVID-19. And then 4 to 6 weeks later, they get these very odd symptoms of rash on their hands or their feet, red eyes, red tongue, sometimes abdominal pain. And then a lot of times it affects the heart very seriously. So their blood pressure gets very low and very weak, rapid pulse. And these kids have been getting really, really ill. Luckily, it's very rare. And there's only about 200 cases that they know in the whole world so far. And in the next few months, I think we're going to hopefully keep learning more about this. But yeah, that's very concerning as well. The risk in Jefferson County, our numbers are actually low, and we've only had one person in the hospital. And in the last month, there's only been two additional cases. So that's all good. However, there's lots of people coming from Seattle and outlying counties, and that puts our risks, it increases our risks, of course. And, you know, I think human nature is, we've been doing this now for a couple of months, and human nature is we're kind of getting a little more loose. I know I am. I'm getting looser in all my efforts, and I have to keep reminding myself, and I want to remind each of you to please keep continuing what we're doing, because it's still there. The risk is still very much there. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you so much, Susan. And the resource number that Susan gave to us, I put in the chat. If you didn't get a chance to write it down, it's in the chat. So let me unspotlight you, Susan, and then we will be moving to Patrick. So let me spotlight you, Patrick. And while I'm doing that, you can go ahead and unmute. All right. So let me introduce you all to Patrick Gaffney. He is the Dean of Students and head football coach at Port Townsend High School. He's been in education for 22 years, the last three of which has been in the Port Townsend School District. He has served in almost every capacity in schools, from teaching math and history to coaching, school counselor, athletic director, principal, assistant principal, assessment director, and dean of students. He's taught both in urban and rural schools, and he's going to talk to us about our Port Townsend School District. So thank you so much for being here today, Patrick.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I can tell you at the schools, this is brand new to us, just like to everybody else. So we're battling through it, trying to figure out how to adjust and adapt. I think the hard thing for our families, our kids and our parents has been, you know, we might roll something out and then have to change it a few days later, a few weeks later. So that's been really hard. This is nothing that we don't have a plan made up for it that, okay, when there's a pandemic, we go to this plan. So, you know, the big thing with this has been, building the plane as we fly it. That's tough. And we know that's tough on families. Some of the feedback I've got from families is that it's hard to get their kids to do any schoolwork. And my advice is, you know, not to fight with them. It's really kind of a short window of their whole education. And if you can't get them to do all the content that's coming home from teachers, I wouldn't worry about it that much. I would, you know, make sure you maintain those relationship that you have with your kids. That's way more important. And there's a lot of learning you can do at home that doesn't have to be a worksheet. You know, I've heard of a lot of parents, a lot of kids doing some cool things, just spending some more time doing things around the house. We have some great teachers at the high school that are rolling out like some cooking assignments. So I'm hearing about these kids cooking at home, doing those things. Do whichever pieces you can do with your kids. Nothing is worth like, you know, going to battle over whether or not they're doing an assignment. I can tell you the grading policies district wide are going to be substantially loosened. We're going to give every kid the benefit of the doubt. We are trying to address the inequity, you know, that we already have inequity in education, and this pandemic situation it's highlighted and amplified those inequities. You know, so the kids that are really struggling when we had them in school are struggling even worse out there. You know, we have kids without a bunch of support. You know, not everybody has the same access to the internet, the same kind of connections. So we're dealing with that. You know, some kids have no internet, no computer. And if they do, they may have the internet and computer and four kids trying to share bandwidth for one, you know, one device. So we're trying to be aware of that and deal with that. Spending a lot of time now looking at what next year might look like. And the answer to a lot of questions is we don't know yet. You know, in a perfect world, tomorrow we'll wake up, there'll be a cure, and we'll get that taken care of, and we'll be back in school. But the reality is there will probably be a hybrid model of some type, whether we're splitting shifts. You know, some kids come on some days, some come on other days. Whether some kids are staying home, maybe bring younger kids to school and the older kids keep online. We don't know yet. There's so many questions, and there's a lot to work through when you start, you know, talking about 1,200 kids and how do we safely bus them to school, and how do we, you know, if we have to, can we test every kid before they get on the bus? You know, and then when they get to school, can we keep that physical distancing? Can we, you know, will our staff be comfortable at school? You know, the price of putting a mask on everybody, a fresh mask every day for 180 school days for every person in the district is hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's so there's a lot of expenses, just a lot of decisions that our school leaders are trying to make. You know, the other thing is athletics right now. It's just kind of a hold on athletics. And we all know that things like sports and band, orchestra, drama, you know, that's what really keeps our kids coming to school. You know, and if we pare our school down to a place to come and do English every day, not a real appealing place. That's a tough one to sell to kids. So we're hoping, you know, we'll keep working on plans through the summer, and hopefully, you know, manage to offer the best education we can. But you know, our biggest concern now is just being compassionate and making connections with kids. And I think that's kind of, you know, a lot of people, I think that is the outlook we should kind of have, just caring about each other right now. So.
That's great, Patrick. Thank you so much. All right. Now I'm going to highlight Heather McCray-Wolf. Heather McCray-Wolf comes from a background in urban K through 12 public education, leading school improvement initiatives in New York City and Detroit Public Schools. She is now a community educator with the Bingy Project, and through their sponsorship, received training in mindfulness and self-compassion. Very timely for today. Heather has also worked with teens as a yoga instructor, a writing tutor, and a facilitator of social justice camp in partnership with the Port Townsend Friends Meeting. So thank you so much, Heather. Go ahead and start talking.
All right. Thank you, Melody. And thanks to all of you. It's an honor to be on the panel with all of you. I just wanted to talk a little bit about how some of the tools that we work with in our mindfulness and self-compassion offerings for teens, but also for adults, can help during this time. And I really appreciated what Patrick was sharing about the uncertainty of this time and how that can be one of the particularly challenging things of changing directions and changing mandates and what's coming next. And one of the benefits of any kind of mindfulness practice is the idea of trying to be in the moment. And we've all heard this in varying ways. And I just want to give an example of something we've tried to start doing at the beginning of some of our online sessions, as well as our in-person sessions, which is to offer the idea of a moment of joy. So we encourage participants to think of any moment that made you smile. And those of you listening right now could go ahead and do that. Something today that made you smile, whether it was a text from a friend, whether it was something in nature, whether it was a picture, and to recollect what that feels like and just acknowledge that there is a moment of joy there. And what this allows us to do is come into the present and then sort of practice and hone our skills for being in the present and aware of things that aren't as fun to remember or aren't as fun to feel. So being mindful of what some of those harder emotions are that come up. And I offer this as a tool potentially for parents as well as for teens. Because if we're able to sit with some of those hard feelings that come up, the anger at a situation, the sadness, the grief at the things that we're not able to do right now, the things that we're losing, the ceremonies that we may have wanted to participate in that we're not able to, then we can give ourselves a little bit of space around those feelings and acknowledge them and just allow them to be there, which often is not nearly as easy as maybe that sounds. And the next step that we talk about in a lot of our sessions is finding some compassion for ourselves in these struggles that we're engaged with. So once you're aware of what that emotion is or what that experience is, can you turn to yourself with a voice of kindness as we might talk to a good friend? And often we're our own, you know, harshest critics. And I think that can be especially true for teens, but I think it's also very true for parents. Speaking as a parent, I know that I often am not so kind in the way I talk to myself in my parenting. And I think it's a reminder to try to be gentle with ourselves. Kristen Neff, who is one of the founders of the mindfulness and self-compassion sort of approach that I was trained on, she shared an idea that I found very helpful, which was that we often talk about compassion fatigue, the idea that so many hard things are happening in the world, and that feels especially true right now, that we are exhausted by them. But she said, well, actually, that's a little bit of a misnomer, because really that should be empathy fatigue, meaning that we are tired of feeling the pain of others. But if we actually apply compassion towards others and ourselves, then we're actually giving out warmth and kindness, love, in a way that can make ourselves feel better. And that shift from just experiencing someone else's pain to trying to send out compassion for that experience can be a very simple but powerful one. And that's one that I also offer to parents as well as teens, because I think in these interactions, particularly now that so many of us are spending a lot of time with our family members and we're in close quarters together, tensions can run high, you know, emotions can flare up. And what are some ways that we can bring a sense of compassion to ourselves and others in those situations? And one practice in that dynamic that I have found helpful is the idea that each breath, you can breathe in compassion for yourself, and you can actually breathe out compassion for whoever you're engaging with at that moment. So for example, if you're engaged in a lockdown, you know, drag out fight with your child over something, can there be a moment of just on a breath, having some compassion for yourself and having some compassion for your child? Both of you are struggling and both of you are potentially resonating from each other's pain, right? We're experiencing, our sympathetic nervous system is activated, experiencing someone else's pain. And so can we pause in that and give a little compassion out to sort of lower the stakes, as it were, lower the intensity of that moment? And I have found that to be a tool that has been surprisingly useful in my own life and working with others. So I think for right now, I'm going to leave it there, but just wanted to recognize that for anybody who is feeling like that they are really struggling as a parent and or as a teen, you know, right now, the Washington Post just reported that nearly half of Americans sheltering in place have reported a worsening of their mental health. And so that's a real phenomenon. And it is not something that we can just brush off and say, oh, I'm just, you know, that's just me, or be our own critic. But to give ourselves some compassion for that, and that we're not in this alone. So thank you.
That's really wonderful, Heather. Thank you so much. To add on to that and what Patrick said earlier, as your local librarian, I would strongly recommend that grownups and teens turn to reading for pleasure. It's a wonderful way to lower your stress. It can put your brain in a meditative state. And I like that Patrick said, you know, that people are learning in a lot of different ways. So turning to reading fiction for pleasure is a wonderful way to cope right now. And we have those great eBooks on the library site. The chat is open if you want to start asking questions, our wonderful audience members. And something else I'd like to add too that I think is good for parents to think about is, in library land, we've been talking a lot about countering
the infodemic. So we know we have a pandemic with COVID-19, but we have a lot of misinformation. And I'm sure Susan could talk for many hours about all the misinformation there is around public health. So on our library website, there's great resources. You know, go to the source, World Health Organization, Center for Disease Control. Go to our Jefferson County Public Health website and the state public health site. I know a lot of people want to share information because they want to be helpful, but I think the thing that I would want to recommend to parents is to talk to their kids about how they're sharing information if they're on social media and to think before they share. Because even if they think they're being helpful, it's not helpful if you're sharing misinformation. And again, your library is here to fact check for you. So let's look and see if we've gotten any questions. The first question that I'd like to put out, I will take this to Patrick. So you can go ahead and unmute yourself, Patrick. And then if another panelist wants to jump in, how does a parent talk to their teen about the pandemic right now?
You're asking me?
Yeah, Patrick.
You know, I think the same way you talk to kids about everything, you'd be honest with them. You talk to them like a young adult. I think there's a real damage at any age with kids if we try to talk down to them and not address, you know, be honest with them. And I think that kind of what you just said, there's so much misinformation out there. I think it's hard to for any of us to talk much about this issue without, you know, throwing our own bias on it. And it seems like it's just another thing that's polarizing us. You know, just like everything else, we seem to want to make it a political thing or something like that. I think the bottom line is spend the time with them and actually answer their question as thoroughly as you can. And if you're not sure, then sit down together and look some things up. But I would say, yeah, anytime you talk to a young adult, a child, that really consider them older than they are when you talk to them, you know, and because most of the time they're smarter than we think and they can handle more than we give them credit for sometimes.
That's great. Thank you so much, Patrick. We just got a question in. I'm going to unhighlight you. So we have a specific question from Jude, but I think that this could be applicable to other people who are running maybe youth groups in the community. And I'll point this to Susan. Jude says, I run a program called Youth Environmental Stewards. Yes, Basecamp. And I want to know if it's safe to recommend that teen participants attend local distance stewardship events, such as the high school garden planting, the middle school orchard project, etc. I don't want to put them in harm's way, but these outdoor projects seem quite healthy. So Susan, what advice would you have for those kind of events?
So I guess I would say that the number of people that are in the group would be important to keep to a low number. I don't know what that number is. It probably depends on how big the garden is and can there be 6 feet between. I would recommend doing masking of everybody. And if there was six people, I think you could probably do it fairly safely. If there starts being more than that, I don't think that's a good idea. I'm trying to think what the official gathering, when they originally were talking about gatherings, but I think that, I don't know, five or six people would probably be the maximum that I would want to see. And even in a distanced group and definitely keeping the 6 feet.
Yeah, I believe in phase two in the governor's plan, it's five people. So I would recommend to everyone to refer to the governor's plan too and the Safe Start program. And I believe Jude just added that. Yeah, I think it's about up to five people in a week. So that's helpful. It means that it's still possible to do that. You just have to take extra precautions. So Patrick, I've got a question for you again. Let me unhighlight Susan. Any plans for graduation? I've heard a little bit potentially about maybe a drive-up graduation.
We're in the works right now. And our principal, Carrie Earhart, she's been working pretty hard with Dr. Locke to make sure that we're following the right guidelines and everything. So our tentative plan right now is to have a what we call it a serpentine, because you need a permit for a parade. So, but to get all the families in their cars with their graduates, and we'll meet. We're thinking at Blue Heron Middle School. Drive through town in a long string of cars, and we'll get that map out to the community so they can hopefully come out on their porches and wave at the graduates and you know, hold signs up, things like that. And the plan right now is to conclude the serpentine out at the drive-in theater. That's a spot, you know, it's a big enough parking lot, and Rick Wiley out there is great. He's volunteered to give us that space. You know, he's just donating his time and his space. Then we'll have everybody pull in there. We'll have individual students, you know, the valedictorian, salutatorian, class speakers come up and give a speech. And it'll actually go through the car radios so everybody can tune in and hear it like they're at the drive-in. We're trying to get an idea on how to actually hand out diploma covers, whatever we do. But there's really some guidance that's been handed out by the governor that really limited some of our ideas. But we are trying to work with those and do whatever we can for the seniors. You know, they deserve a good experience. We're hoping to make it as special as we can. You know, it won't be the same. And unfortunately, you know, there's limited parking out there, so we'll have to, you know, probably limit it to one car per household, which is unfortunate because usually, you know, our graduations are packed. And I know there's people that like to just come and support their community. You know, some people have some pretty big families and they end up wanting to bring 15, 20 people. We won't be able to do that, but we are trying to plan something special for them. And you know, it'll be something that no other class has done. So, you know, even though they've been kind of robbed of their senior year, hopefully this will give them a little bit something to talk about.
That's really heartening, Patrick. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm going to go to Heather now. And I do have it looks like Heather has something she wants to add. So you can go ahead and unmute yourself, Heather. And then I have a question for you.
Oh, thanks, Melody. I was just going to add one thought as well. We've been talking a little bit with the Benji Project. We had planned a launch series for seniors graduating from high school, and we're still working on possibly offering an online version of that. But one thing that has come up in our conversations is how families might consider coming up with some of their own rituals and ceremonies, in addition to all of the great ideas that Patrick's talking about and that the high school is working on, but just to really honor this moment, and that there might be ways that families can really get creative themselves internally about what are some other ways of really marking this transition for their senior.
That's great. So Heather, and then I'd like to have David touch on this too, if he has anything to add. What advice do you have for parents managing screen time with their teens? Because I think we have a community that really cares about that and is very intentional. And now it seems like everything is wide open. So what advice do you have for parents about that right now?
Well, I certainly have no easy advice. I feel like speaking myself as someone who has worked really hard to have my 10-year-old spend very minimal time on screens and suddenly figuring out how to make a shift where more of her time is online is a challenge. So I really resonate with the challenge. I think we've been trying to look at, and I've talked to other parents and teens about how to, you know, figure out what is optimal. And I think David mentioned earlier the idea of like negotiating and having agreements. And so really having a conversation about what are your needs around this and what feels good for you. I think that brings in a little piece of the mindfulness part. I think their kids react differently to screen time. And for some of them, for example, doing a Zoom class with a lot of people is really overwhelming and challenging. And so just recognizing that, and I think honoring an experience, like if there are kids who are saying, I can't do that all the time, I can't do it as much, then figuring out what a balance is for them and just trying to help them notice what the effect is, you know, on their own sort of being. So that's just one piece.
That's great. Thank you so much, Heather. It's not an easy answer, but I'm going to turn to David now to add to this.
Yeah, I to add to what Heather was saying, I don't think I would have parents counting how many hours their kids are on their screen. I think what I would say is just ask your teenager to take some time away from the screen every day and do something else. And remember, it's not just a computer screen. It's their iPad. It's their phone. It's a television. So there's lots of screens. Kids spend a lot of time on it. I think I wouldn't count how many hours they're there or limit how many hours. I would just insist that they spend some time away from the screen.
Yeah, I think that's great. I know, too, for the library, we've tried to be really intentional about having active, engaging programs that we're offering for the community. So it's not just passive viewing, because I think so much of this time of physical distancing, we want to help promote some social interactions and not have social isolation, too. So I would recommend looking for opportunities like that over just passively viewing a screen. So I'm going to turn it over to Susan now. Susan, if parents have essential jobs in the community, is there really a big risk if kids are going out and hanging with a few friends? What should they be thinking about in terms of that?
Well, I sort of keep thinking about the bubble that we're in, and the more people that we interact with and the more people in our household that interact with other people, the bigger that risk ends up being. So it's true that if parents are essential workers and they're going away to their work and they're potentially being exposed, they can bring it back to the household. Kids going off with their friends can also do that. And the more of that that's happening, the more risk there is. So it doesn't mean that if someone's doing it, the other people, it's not going to be any additional risk. It is an additional risk, but I guess the other pieces of that we talked about earlier about focusing on, is there ways of making sure that that's decreased to a certain degree? Like if there's not 8 kids that they're visiting with, or it's down to maybe 1 or 2, and if there's good hand washing and they're agreeing on all these important hygiene things to keep the virus from spreading quite so quickly, and washing their hands and disinfecting and all those sorts of things, that can decrease it. But it's not, if somebody else is doing it, then it makes it fine for someone. But it does add to the risk, I guess, is my answer to that.
That's great, Susan. Thank you for that. Patrick, I'm going to turn to you. And you touched on this a little bit, and I'm maybe the one outlier that would have loved English all day as a librarian. But you said, you know, kids are missing band and sports, and we don't know exactly when those are going to come back. Are there anything else that's being planned for them in the interim? Anything virtual?
No, we're really limited right now. We're not allowed to have contact. As a coach, we get pretty strict orders not to do anything. I mean, I have kids who want to know if I, you know, give them some kind of workout to do. It's tough. We're so limited. You got to make sure we're not coaching right now. I know that Daniel Ferland, our band director of both schools, does an outstanding job. And this has been a really frustrating time for him, because he knows, you know, his program is, he's built a great program with the orchestra, and he knows that kids are not putting in the time they need to right now. And so it's, there's going to be a lingering effect there. Just with kids doing that, you know, same thing as a football coach, I would love to have my kids in the weight room right now. And I know that most of them don't have access to a gym. We've tried to ask if we can let them in 5 kids at a time. I think all that's, anything you can do with kids is great. If you can keep that, you know, keep that space, follow the guidelines. Hopefully we move through these phases, and I'm hoping about, you know, mid-June we'll get into phase 3 and we'll be able to start. That's when you can start gathering with bigger groups. Hoping we could get something going with athletics. You know, there may be things, we just have to wait, and that's the that's the hard part for a lot of us too, you know. I know with teachers, they're used to having the answers, and a lot of them are really frustrated right now because they don't have the answers, and we can't answer everything that people are asking right now. So, I hope to see sports this year. I really do. I think school without that stuff, yeah, you know, maybe there are a couple people out there who would like to go to English all day long, but and that's nothing against the English. We got some great English teachers, but I know I wouldn't. But yeah, school without, you know, and we're also talking about models where we go back to school and kids eat lunchroom in a classroom spread out, you know, and or we put the kids in a class and teachers rotate to the kids, so there's no passing periods. So we remove the social aspect of school, and I think everybody on this panel could speak to how powerful the social aspect is of school with kids. You know, David hit on it. This is a time where kids, their friend group can become more important than their family, you know, especially depending on their situation as a kid. You know, maybe you don't have a strong family, but your friends become really, really important right now. So I think if we, you know, again, I'm worried that we go back if it's too much of a dry environment, you know. It's healthy, it's sterile, but it's sterile in more than one way, and that's not fun for kids or actually the adults either. I mean, even though, you know, we all have content areas we teach, it's we're there for kids, and those of us that are used to having kids around us all the time, we're going crazy not seeing them. So it's I wish there was an answer right now. We're just waiting like everybody else.
Yeah. This is Charlie McGee from
Thank you, Patrick. I also saw that a question G'day, came through just about how much emphasis should we put on schoolwork from an attendee who joined us a little bit later, and I appreciate that you had said that's not the most G'day, important thing McGee to focus on right now, and I think Heather responded too, and I think that leads me to ask David a question. David, what fights are worth having between parents and teens? Because it's going to come up. This is a challenging time.
Well, that's a tough question. When with younger adolescents, a lot of times the fusses are more about autonomy issues. When can I wear makeup? You know, what's my curfew? You know, I want to watch this television show, that sort of thing. And so they tend to be over smaller kinds of issues. Now they get, younger adolescents get very intense about that sort of stuff. And to the most extent, they're not life determining kinds of things. When older adolescents and parents get into fights, it tends to be much more, larger issues. What am I going to major in? What kind of work am I going to do? I don't want to live at home anymore. I want to live with my friends or something like that. So, I think picking your battles, it goes back to things that both Susan and Heather said. I mean, I think you have to kind of decide which things are most vital to you and your family, and pick three. Pick the three. I want my kid to go to church with me. I want my kid to sit down and have meals with me. And, you know, one other thing, I want my kid to be in bed by 12 o'clock or something like that. And pick three things, and that's what you're going to fight about. That's what you're going to stick to. And, some of the other little things, you kind of have to let them go.
That's great, David. Thank you for that. My next question is for Heather. Heather, if a parent sees that their teen is sleeping a lot, more than usual for a teenager, and they've tried everything, what else should they do if they're worried about that they seem depressed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's a really important question. And I just want to go back to what Susan had mentioned when she spoke at the beginning, that just emphasizing that there are mental health resources available. So if you're really concerned about your teen, please seek support. And that the school counselors are still available, even though schools are closed. So I just want to reiterate that. And I think, though, there's a couple things. I mean, one, I just wanted to reflect that when we first started doing some of our online sessions with teens, one of the things we heard was gratitude for being able to sleep. And so it, on the plus side, there are teens who are actually benefiting from a little bit of downtime from their schedule and getting up really early in the morning, which is a different question than if you're feeling like your teen is depressed, and that those are obviously separate things. But recognizing that teens do tend to have slightly different sleep schedules than their parents, and that is a normal fact. But just really checking in, I think, about where some of those emotional state of being, where that is. And I would just want to turn it back to Susan also to make sure we're putting out there any other resources in the community specific to questions of depression.
Great. Thank you so much for that. Susan, what would you like to add?
I think I was just going to say the same thing. The school-based health center counselors are available, and there's other resources as well. But that, I think that's that number that's already been on the chat that Melody put up there. I just want to make sure people know that's a good start, because we can then funnel people where they need to go from there. That's a good place to ask questions for mental health, physical health, or any of those issues for teens. Thank you.
Great. Yeah, speaking about that too, I'll turn it back to Heather. Any additional resources, Heather, that you would add in terms of how to combat anxiety for teens and for their parents, right? You have to put your life mask on yourself first, right?
Absolutely. And I just put in the chat the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is a national resource that is an important one, at 1-800-273-8255. And there's chat online as well. I think another feedback that we've gotten from teens, one of the things we've asked is, when we were first having some of these conversations, what's the thing that's stressing you out the most in this time of quarantine? And the biggest answer was my parents, which maybe won't be surprising, right? But it wasn't just my parents in terms of like struggles maybe around some of the questions we've talked about already, but it was really my parents' stress. So it was concern about the parents' state of being and how that was impacting. So I think that's a really important thing. And, you know, as Melody, as you mentioned, like the put your own air mask on before you put on your kids, which always seems like such a strange direction. And yet what is so true about that is that we as parents need to be concentrating on our own regulation as well and noticing like, how am I feeling? How am I behaving? How am I managing my stress? Because it has a profound effect more than we might always be aware on how the other members of my family and especially my young people are doing. And so what are those tools to support your own well-being? And I wanted to go back just briefly to Jude had added a comment about nature challenges being a great resource. And I know that she works with that a lot with the YES program. And I think that nature and time outside, time outdoors, in addition to the idea of like time off screens, but time outside is so valuable. And I would say for all of us in these times, especially finding ways of connecting with the outdoors, and we're blessed to live in a beautiful place. And so what are some ways to do that? And for everyone that looks different, it doesn't look the same for everyone, but just keeping that in mind as a real mental health resource, I think, is incredibly important.
We're so, so fortunate here in Port Townsend that we have access to amazing nature. And our city is doing really wonderful initiatives to open up streets more so that there's more safe ways for people to be able to walk throughout town with physical distance. I just saw that Patrick posted in the chat that the school has an amazing counselor. Patrick, can the students get a hold of the counselor right now?
Yeah, I was talking about our school-based counselor that Susan referred to provide for us. She's amazing. And I know she's been working since the school's, you know, since we closed. She's been coming in and making contacts, just phone check-ins with kids. It's good. It's great. A lot of schools our size don't have that resource. So it's amazing that we have it here. She helps out a ton of kids, and I guess I'm just backing what everybody else said and giving her a little plug there. She's great, and like I said, she really hasn't missed a beat and trying to make sure she connects with the kids that she was working with and actually gaining extra kids.
That's great. Thank you so much, Patrick. Now I'm going to go to David. David, go ahead and add, and then everybody's going to have about a minute to share their final thoughts. I can't believe we are already at time.
I wanted to add to what Heather was saying. I watch the news a lot, and I look on CNN or other news on my phone. And sometimes the more I check that, the more agitated I get. So sometimes one way to reduce anxiety or tension in the family is kind of to turn off the news and just go without it for a little bit. If nothing's going to happen that quickly that we can't catch up. So maybe just turning off the TV and some of the news. Sometimes it's just overwhelming.
That's great. Did you have any other final thoughts to add, David?
One last thought. I wanted to go back to something Patrick said at the very beginning about what to tell your teenager. I agree entirely with Patrick. I thought he was very wise in what he said. It's important with teenagers to have candor and to be truthful. They can handle it. Tell them what's happening. Younger children, elementary school kids, they're developmentally different. There's some different issues there, different ways to talk about things. Teenagers, be forthright and candor and tell them what's going on.
That's great. Thank you so much, David. All right, Susan, go ahead and share your final thoughts with us.
Thank you. I guess I just wanted to say I wanted to give a shout out to Megan Smith, who Patrick was talking about, who's at the Port Townsend school. And she's also at Blue Heron, and she's been doing a great job. And then we have Rebecca down in Chimacum and Quilcene. So I just want to thank everybody for their thoughts and their questions and for asking me on this panel. And I don't have anything else to say. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you so much, Susan. Quick final thoughts, Patrick?
Yeah, I guess I would say the same thing. And if anything, just always fall back on being compassionate. You won't go wrong. Be truthful and be compassionate with your kids. And, you know, if in doubt, give them the benefit of the doubt, be compassionate, and it'll work out.
I think that's wise advice for everybody, Patrick. Yeah. Thank you so much for that. All right, Heather, final thoughts?
Yeah, I think just one addition around supporting young people in this time is maybe encouraging and allowing them to find things that do make them feel a sense of accomplishment. Because I think one of the things that is so challenging right now is like, what can we be doing that we feel good at, that we can do? And even if that thing is, you know, baking brownies or writing a letter to a friend, like what is something that feels like it can give a sense of meaning? And that really is different for everyone, but supporting your own child in discovering that, just like I think all of us are working to discover what those things are, and that those things might be changing in this time. We might be finding meaning in surprising places and in different ways, and allowing ourselves all the time to explore that.
Right. So. Thank you so much. I want to give a big round of applause to our amazing panelists. Thanks to KPTZ. This will be posted on KPTZ, and we'll have the video recording on the library website and Skillmation. And you all stay well, stay healthy, and I'm sending everybody a virtual hug. So thanks again.
Thank you, Melody.
And good night.
Thanks, everybody. That was...
This is KPTZ, Port Townsend. Thank you to Skillmation, Port Townsend Schools, Jefferson County Public Health, Port Townsend Public Library, and the Benji Project for making this seminar available to the public. Thank you for listening.